back and we're joined by Mr. Bob Fisher, who is going to take us on a Rediscovering America journey. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, sir. From the mountaintops down to the seashore, actually.
Yeah, we're gonna talk about the Crab Lady of Cape Cod, are we not?
Yeah, the Crab Lady of Cape Cod, right. You know, I'm sure you've discovered this too, that some destinations are even better when the tourists go home. And we discovered Cape Cod in quite a different way. And it turned out to be a very ecotourist experience for us. And it all revolves around a wonderful person called Maureen Johnson, a role model, who, as a volunteer, spends her days in the good weather on the beaches at, or on a particular beach in Cape Cod, educating passersby about an amazing species called the horseshoe crab. Anyway, did you get to see pictures of a horseshoe crab?
Yes, I do.
Did it remind you of anyone?
And I'm not sure I know how to answer that question.
Well, actually, it's a compliment, Roy, because it is an amazing experience. But I need to tell you a little bit about, first of all, that Cape Cod, you know, a wonderful destination, as a vacation destination, great beaches. And but I think what a lot of people don't know, it's also very a very important environmental and ecotourism, soft adventure destination as well. We started at the Cape Cod Museum of Natural History, which is a wonderful facility because it's integrated.
And it's in the town of Brewster, right?
Yeah, the Cape itself, of course, is not that large, but it's a 17,000 square foot building built right into the shoreline environment and the salt flats. Terrific displays, and you get to learn an awful lot about the geology of this area and the various flora and fauna. Very unique. The kinds of things that, quite frankly, I as a traveler need some help with. You know, I can do the reading and that sort of thing.
Right.
But when you come across a facility like this that is so well presented,
right,
it really engages you, and you really start to see what has not met the eye as you wandered around. But Cape Cod is known for some special species such as American eels, spider crabs, and a fish that they find in the salt marshes called a mummichog. Love the name, obviously an American Indian name. But what I enjoyed most in that particular facility were the moon jellies. And these are incredibly beautiful marine species, translucent creatures, and they're just hypnotic the way that they move in the aquarium. And when you stop and think that off the shores of Cape Cod, you've got the great whales as well, next to these tiny diaphanous moon jellies, and you start to really wonder and realize what the oceans are all about. I think it's very significant that, you know, the human species, we came from the oceans. You remember that? And crawled up onto the sands and shed our fins and developed limbs and
turned into a crab lady.
That's right. Or a couple of crabby old men. But anyway, what I found it in this particular time and place in Cape Cod, you really started to get a new appreciation of the sea, of the oceans. And this came back to me recently because my wife and I went to a lecture given by a specialist on the oceans. And at the end of this piece, I've given an update, as a matter of fact, on the importance of what I call the once abundant oceans, because there is a crisis on the planet in terms of our environment and the oceans. And as you know, in the travel industry, we're becoming more and more aware of the traveling public's desire and need for soft adventure ecotourism that is very integrated into the local environment. 71% of the Earth's surface is water, and 99% of the living space on the planet is water-based. And that means that we, as the prime species here, you know, we're essentially water-based as well. But back to the crab lady.
Yeah, and the horseshoe
crab. Diane and I we had walked out through the salt marshes, a very special environment in itself, and I'm sure you've seen the great tides at Cape Cod, that when they're out, you have these vast spaces of marine life and pools, and it's just delightful just to walk from pool to pool and discover what's in each pool. But off in the distance, there was a lone figure. This was early spring, as a matter of fact, and we saw this person kind of strolling back and forth, and as we were sort of drawn to her, and she was, as I said, a solitary figure, but her body language kind of gave the impression that it was an expectation of things to come, and with patience. Well, we approached her, and we had to walk around several tide pools, and came up to her, and she was wearing my hat, Roy, the Tilly hat.
Well, you know, I noticed that, and I was amazed how these hats are beginning to immigrate into other parts of the world.
They're the best hat you can wear, and I swear I don't get any percentage from the Tilly company, but we all know that we have to protect ourselves from the sun and all that sort of thing. Anyway, so Maureen is wearing a Tilly hat, my hat, and so am I. Well, you know, that
and that started
enough,
off
bond,
right away, yeah. Obviously. Yeah.
Yeah. But what she is in her 70s, she moved to Cape Cod, retired in Cape Cod by herself, and got involved with environmental organizations and taught herself a fair amount, especially about this species, the horseshoe crab. And she became very passionate about it because it is a very special species that is threatened. And so she spends, as I said, she is a role model. She is a public educator in the best sense of the word.
And refers to the horseshoe crab as the blue-blooded crab.
Yeah, and it literally, and I thought she was just, you know, making reference to its status in her mind, but really it is a crab that has literally blue blood. It's a fascinating creature. There's so much that you can read about it, but the important thing about the horseshoe crab is that it has no natural immune system. What it has developed, it's older than the dinosaurs, by the way. It preceded the dinosaurs by about 100 million years. So it's a prehistoric species.
We see a lot of them here. They mate right on our beach here at a certain time of year.
And are you very careful to, if you see one up turned upside down, to turn it over?
Well, yes, I'm very familiar with it from a kid, you know, living up in the Northeast. So horseshoe crabs, we've always known them, and you have to be a little cautious of that tail.
Well, you know, I thought of you when I was reading the story, because of course Maureen came from New Jersey as well, and that's where she, as a young girl, first discovered this. She was out walking on the beach with her mother one day,
right?
And here was an upturned horseshoe crab with its legs flailing around, and her mother had that, you know, the reaction, which is of course the wrong reaction to have with children, was ooh, what a horrible thing. Maureen, as you know, said it, said, no, you know, I want to help this. The creature needs to be turned over, and which she did, etc.
Right.
And so it really became a lifelong purr. But it's an amazing creature because, as I said, it has no immune system, but it does have a chemical in its blood that if any bacteria gets into the body, into the blood system, it immediately, instantly coagulates. And the reason, one of the reasons why the horseshoe crab is so important is because it's used now in the development of new medications for humans. Previously, you know, when we developed new medications, we would put them in a sterile environment, and but frequently that environment was not totally sterile. And they now test new drugs in the environments that they put them in by adding some of this horseshoe blue blood. And if it immediately coagulates, you know that you don't have a sterile environment for the medication. And so the horseshoe crabs, they're not harmed. Maureen assured us of that, but they do a service to humanity. They are they're gathered every now and then and brought into special labs where some of the they donate their blood. They're blood donors. And that blood is used, therefore, in the production of new drugs.
And you have some interesting photographs as well on the site. I'm looking at them now.
Yeah, she's the one. If you look at the, you see the photograph where Maureen is pointing to.
Where it's actually upside down, yes.
Is the molt of the horseshoe crab.
Right.
The species molts 17 or 18 times during its life. And it's an amazing process in itself. And that photograph you can see where she's got the carapace turned upside down. It's a beautiful, beautiful animal too, because it's an example of the symmetry that you find in nature, in all kinds of species. And you know, frequently we don't really pay attention to it, and I understand why that is. You know, we're all moving along, etc. But then when you come across someone like Maureen, who just says, look at this. And what she's doing in that photograph is she's explaining to us how the animal actually swims, and it swims backwards. And she calls it a comical prehistoric comedy. And then the two of us got into trying to figure out, well, how do you describe the motion of a horseshoe crab? And we both decided that the term a fantasia of motion would best describe it. But when the animal is an arthropod, by the way, it's not a crustacean, as some people think, and its Latin name is beautiful name, Limulus polyphemus. It has a Japanese cousin too, by the way, which is the helmet crab, the Kabutogani, which in Japan is considered a national treasure. And it really is on the eastern seaboard. It really is a national treasure as well, for so many reasons. Very much part of that whole ecosystem, which is the Atlantic flyway.
It's kind of interesting as well, because people seem to leave them alone, I guess, because they're a little bit spooky kids, as you say. We'll gently turn them over and have a look at them, and I don't know where they go when they go off the beach, because I've done a lot of scuba diving and you just don't see them, you know, around like you would normal crabs. I think they bury themselves in the sand most of the time.
I think they do, and as what I think is rather funny too is when mating season arrives, and they love a full moon, and it's sort of the horseshoe crab version of Saturday Night Fever, and the females all come up onto the beach, and then the males start cruising along the beach,
and connect
and of course
to
they're
them.
Attracted to the females by the pheromones, the sweet smelling females.
Right, I can see thousands of them along our beach, and the interesting point is that the males are much smaller than the females.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the females have a lot of work to do as well. You know, an average female will deposit about 80,000 eggs in the sand. Collectively, I'm talking here, in clusters of about 4,000, and they go back and forth to the beach as well. And part of what I tried to do in this article as well is to show how how important the ocean environment, the beach environments. We love beaches. I love a beach and love going to it. But even the sand dunes, as you know, are very fragile ecosystems. And
absolutely.
And constantly changing, constantly threatened, not only by the natural forces, which are enormous. And just reading yesterday, for example, in the New Yorker magazine about Louisiana, and it's actually sinking, and we look at what you know, global warming and all that sort of thing, how we're changing weather patterns, and weather patterns change, and therefore the shoreline changes, everything. It's the whole interconnectedness, and it's part of the mythology of animals like this, that they are the template, they are the canary in the coal mines. And if we don't pay attention to some of these very sensitive species that are telling us that, you know, we're making some pretty big mistakes here.
Now, just getting back to Cape Cod for a moment,
yep.
Websites for research, and do you have a couple of suggestions on where to stay?
Yeah, the Cape Cod, of course, is terrific for its B&Bs and small hotels. We were particularly taken by...
you were at the Chatham, were you?
In Chatham, and if you go to chathamcapecod.com, especially the Cyrus Kent House, a beautiful B&B, and Cape Cod, of course, is so historic, and the architecture is wonderful. And can I mention a particular restaurant which was absolutely superb?
Well, you know, it's lunchtime. Christian. Everybody does this to me at lunchtime.
I know.
But go ahead.
But it was, you know, like, we come from Toronto, and we're not that close to the ocean, and we don't get that seafood that readily. Well, I'll tell you, the seafood at Christian's, and it's simply christianrestaurant.com. And a great pub, too, by the way, called the Chatham Squire. And that's simply www.thesquire.com.
Now,
all the other websites there are
they're up on the site,
well.
And one can look at them, and there's a direct link. We suggest you do that. Great article, Bob. And I'd just like to take a moment to mention that next week we're going to do a special on Quebec and their winter festival, and it should be a very, very interesting hour, I would say. Would you not?
An hour and a bit, and we've got a good lineup, and we've got Melissa coming on board to talk about dog mushing, and I'm going to be doing my thing, and you're going to be doing your thing. I'm going to show all the funny pictures of you that we took during the Quebec Winter Carnival.
Being
and
run
our
into
good buddy Alicia Seguin, Richard will be on the show, and Sylvain Gagné. So it'll be a return to Quebec Winter Carnival next week.
I'm really looking forward. So, Bob, thank you very much, and we'll be talking to you next week.
Okay, all the best.
Thanks. Bye for now.
Bye.